Ken McCusick joins us in studio. Good morning, Ken.
How you doing, Rob?
FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, this team is so much fun to watch. If the left doesn't get you the right will, if they don't run the football down your throat, they'll throw it. Or in games like Monday, they'll do both. Seven consecutive games and rushing for more than 100 yards, or more than their opponents, I should say. That's impressive, but they've done better.
Yeah, it's a historic number, and I tell you what, it's a fun time for using StatHead to find these little stats. This is one of the ones I really enjoyed, though. So the Ravens have seven straight games. The only other two teams that have done it seven straight times were in the 1940s, the New York Yankees and the Eagles from the late 40s. No team has six, no team has eight, and the team they're looking up at is the 2018-19 Ravens, who had nine straight such games, Lamar's first nine games in the NFL.
Yeah, wow. Unreal. Unreal. It's just amazing, Ed, the numbers offensively that he's putting together throughout his career so far.
Oh, they're stunning. The team is immensely talented. It's stunning. But they've got certain things that drive me crazy, like this. I've been concerned about, despite, it's not going to show up as blowing a lead because they won these games. Like the Cowboy game and now even the Buccaneer game, where they had these teams beaten badly. Why do they not put teams away and make you swallow hard at the end of every game and sweat?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's not good. They're playing a lot of soft zone defense and giving up some yards. They are on the field for a lot of consecutive plays in the fourth quarter of those games, if you look for the common threads. And the Cowboys was like 24 out of 27. This game, it might have been 25 out of 28 with only that three-play break for Hill. They got zero production out of their pass rush in the fourth quarter. Now, when I say that, I'm talking about the interior defensive linemen where they were shorthanded, and they also didn't get a single pressure in the fourth quarter. Now, Pierce had, had one on a two-point try.
Right.
That doesn't really count, but it did count. Yeah, but it's one of the reasons why it's very hard to play defense in the fourth quarter. Is you get very tired at the rotational positions, and you give up tons of free opportunities.
And this is why I was really trepidatious about bringing Dean Pease back, because to me, this is his trademark. It's a soft zone at the end of a game where you give up a lot of yardage and points. It's like, I don't like this at all. These games should have been just, you keep the pedal down, put pressure on them in every single way, and do what you did for the first 50 minutes of the game.
Agreed. Ken McCusick, FilmStudyBaltimore.com, join us. Ken, I've thought for a long time that they could get so much more productivity out of Rashad Bateman. I think Rashad Bateman was more victimized, more so than the culprit. What was the key to his success Monday night?
Yeah, first of all, they're playing a lot of man coverages and an opportunity for Bateman to be open down the field because they're committing to the line of scrimmage the way the Commanders did the week before as well. So there's some of that. Also, there's just clearly a better trust between Lamar and Bateman right now. He looked for him on an extended play. The one where he rolled to the right sideline, he hit him for 59 yards. He waved him to the middle of the field and just threw the footballs. He's trusting that Bateman is going to get to the spot. He can do that when the backs of the two players are turned to him because he's only giving that information to Bateman. And so that was a great one there. He did the same thing to Likely in the end zone. Previously on the amazing Lamar sideline throw. So from the words I never thought I'd say department, yeah. Rashad Bateman leads the NFL in yards per target at 13.1 for all qualifying players who have 4+ targets per game.
What do you think let's stick with Bateman a second. It was funny. Bateman blamed the media about the relationship. He said it would never, I'm not buying that for a second. If you look at the stats, he was not a favorite of Lamar's. But what do you think the turnaround? Because all of a sudden, it looks like his confidence in him. And was it what the Buccaneers were giving him, or is it just,
Some of it probably came from the Commanders game. I think he caught all four balls that were thrown to him in that game. The best thing for Lamar is to be an extended play target. And kind of the worst thing, and it's because Bateman's strength, is to be a guy who needs to have the ball in the air when he comes out of his break. Because Lamar wants to see the player break. And probably rather be boiled in oil than admit that was true, but it's what I see on the field is in terms of how he's making throws. He really needs to see that player crossing so he can judge where that ball needs to be or coming back to the quarterback before it happens. Well, Bateman then loses his separation advantage if you don't throw it immediately before he makes his break. But I've really liked it. And you know, the bomb to Bateman was one of the few balls Lamar's ever thrown in his career that hasn't been overshot Bateman by 10 yards.
Yeah.
No.
And again, it tells me that these two have probably been working together a little bit more. Maybe that's a part of the trust here with Kim McCusick. FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, I thought the Ravens did a move that was all that was genius. To me, from you're watching the All-22. I'm just watching what the camera shows me. It looked like the Bucs basically loaded the box, selling out the run. Ravens knew they wanted to weaken that defense and push them back a little bit, and they weren't going to do a lot of running. So they just kept Derrick Henry on the sidelines. To me, that's the rest that you give a 30-year-old running back when you can afford to rest in those situations. I thought it was genius.
Sure. I mean, hey, first of all, you want multiple running backs who can actually give you something to be on the field. But Henry, if he just comes in the second half of games, is extraordinarily valuable in that. I mean, they say he gets stronger as the game goes on. That's not really what's happening. What's getting happy is everybody else is getting weaker, and he's not dropping off that much. And that's really a great situation to have. If you go back to the mid-1980s, the Redskins at the time had a great two-back combination where they bring in Ricky Irvins in the second half to relieve Beiner.
It used USC,
to be a half of each, and that really worked out for them. I think this kind of thing for the Ravens is great. I'm not seeing a strict one half at a time platoon. What they're doing at the Hill is perfect in terms of the plays they have them in for.
Sticking with the offense, the Buccaneers dominated time of possession. Mm-hmm. They had the ball for 10 more minutes than the Ravens. Yet the Ravens put over 500 yards in offense and 41 points and all that. Do we now have a quick strike offense? Because they didn't grind things out this game. They put up a ton of yards, but they did it in big chunks.
Yep. I mean, a short number of plays. They only had 54 offensive plays in this game, and the Bucs had 77, I believe. But that's actually a problem. They allowed 11 of 17 on third down. The Ravens scored very quickly from all over the field, of course, as you're talking about. And that does end up with some tiring, having four defensive linemen active. Again, a problem in a game like that.
You know we don't have any more, Ed? An either-or offense. That's what we don't have. If you have to have more than 10 minutes of time of possession than your opponents, they'll have it. If they don't have to have that, they won't have
it. That's not surprising. Usually a dominating time of possession.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 41-31. Baker Mayfield with a big game, 31-45, 370. A lot of those yards were in garbage time. He did have the two interceptions. One was a drive killer for the Buccaneers. I think that turned the game around, to be honest with you.
The play.
But he sacked three times, 14 yards. But I thought he had a little bit too much time and was able to move around too much in that pocket, Ken.
Yeah, very, very clean opportunity set for him. He had 17 ample time and space opportunities. And that usually is about in the high 20% range. But he had only 10 pressures the entire game. They dropped back 48 times to throw and had a sack or pass 48 times. That's an unbelievable low number of pressures. And a lot of that was in the fourth quarter when they're running all these consecutive plays. And the Ravens are really waving the white flag also, trying to get Todd Bowles to figure out it's time to end the game.
Right.
And didn't happen.
Yeah. Talk a little bit of Roquan. I mean, obviously the offense gets all the ink because it's spectacular. It really is this year. You got Lamar and you got Derrick Henry. And I've never had this much fun watching Ravens football. Roquan's still carrying that defense. In my opinion, him and Hamilton are just indispensable.
Yeah, they're playing great, and there was some question the first couple games of this year. Each of them missed some tackles, but Roquan is now, with 18 tackles in this game, has made 59 consecutive tackles over the last five games, which is just absurd. I think we did see one thing is that they keep sticking him way up in the A-gap, and he's having trouble covering routes on the outside. They made note of it on the on the broadcast. I really liked what Tampa Bay was doing in that respect because they line up like a yard and a half, 2 yards off the ball, and their linebackers can still get around. And they also have some more choice of gap that they can use. You probably fool the lineman a little bit less on where you're going, but that just seems like, to me, a superior way to do it.
Ken McCusick joins us. Ken, the internet would tell you that Iceland is the safest place in the world.
Sounds like you got that from Jeremy.
EC... it's really the safest place in the world. That's Ed Circle. And when you're in Ed Circle, he never asks about you. So since he won't, I will. What were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers doing at the end of the game? Even after the gruesome, gruesome injury that we saw that stopped the game for Chris Godwin, the very next play they threw the ball again. What was going on there, man?
I have no idea. It was beyond weird. It was weird when they were still trying, even the onside kick, down 17 with 3 minutes to go, And they just missed that two-point conversion where they could have made it a two-score game. At that point, just run the game out. If you look back only 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I guess, in that Buffalo game in week four, it's as if the two coaches were communicating from the sidelines. They ran the last 7-17 of that game off in 11 plays. Think about that. Mm-hmm. That's more than 30 seconds per play they took. The last 7-17 of this game took 28 plays.
Oof.
And so, you know, and then what does it finish with? They have five passes after Godwin's injury. Five passes in a row, all additional chances. And then Mayfield runs for 12 yards and doesn't slide on the final play of the game. Just hilarious.
Forget the Ravens for a second. What do you think this does now? Because it's obviously a serious injury to Godwin. Evans is a star, and he's questionable now with the hamstring, which was bothering before the game. How does this affect their ability now going to play the Falcons for the division lead? Like, is that a huge hit for them, or is it...
Yeah, I'm certainly not worried about what happens to Tampa Bay. It is a hit for them. They have decent backup receivers. McMillan is a guy who probably can step up and make some plays based on just what we saw yesterday or 2 days ago. But I'm honestly just not really that worried. They play in the NFC South, which is a very weak division. The NFC in general is very weak, so they've got all sorts of backdoor possibilities. And they'll probably make the playoffs, and they'll probably be one and done.
Yep. Ken McCusick, FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, we sat here, I think it was after week three, and the Ravens just ran the football. And people called and said, this is the identity. And I said, I don't want this as the identity. And I was asked, put the pushback, well, you want them to throw all the time? I want the identity to be, we can do whatever we need to do to win games. That has become their identity more so now than I've ever remembered before.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, the only offense they ever had that was even in this league was the 2019 offense that was even more run dependent.
Right.
That team went on fourth down. They said, try and stop us again, you know, kind of thing. I love that offense, and it was slightly better so far than this year's offense at 3.08 points per drive to 2.95 being the major marking point there. But I think this team maybe has a chance to catch it from behind. It won't be easy, but it's a great offense, and they certainly have skill position players that are very likable all over the place. It's just a really nice thing to have.
They're not pass dependent. They're not run dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, they kept Derrick Henry off the field as they were driving the football down the Buccaneers' throats.
I think the one thing I would push a little stop sign on is that this team has a really weak offensive line. And the offensive line is 5/11 of your offense. So they're very capable of hosing up. So people want to talk about skill position players all the time, and I like the skill position players. They're great. And Ronnie Stanley has played great, and Tyler Lindebaum has played generally very well, though he didn't have a good game on Monday.
Yeah.
But the rest of the interior line looks questionable again. I'm not completely sold that Rosengarten is there yet, although he scored pretty well in 3 out of 4 games. It's a group that has some troubles.
Yeah, and it's important because that's how they lost to the Bills in the playoffs years ago. When that was a 10-whatever game, the offensive line just took a dump and then they couldn't do anything. Anyway, we were talking earlier about the upcoming games now with the Ravens going to be favored. I've been favored all year, I guess. But three division games in the next four games, Browns, Bengals, Steelers. I would think the Steelers are the most challenging because they look like they're pretty good this year. The Browns or Bengals worry you, or do the Steelers worry you?
Every Sunday worries me a little bit.
Yeah,
I think you have to be a good fan. You have to really be a worrywart, you know, and then you want to be on the internet looking up at 3 a.m. what's going on with yards per target and whatnot. Even the Browns, I'm a little bit concerned. You know, they've got something new to play for. They've got a new quarterback to play for. They're gonna like that. The Bengals are maybe turning around their season. They look like they're probably more likely than not to me right now to make the playoffs. Still, and that game is going to mean a lot to them in Baltimore. And the Steelers, of course, they know if they win 1 out of 2 and anything is any kind of stumble by the Ravens, they could still win the division. So,
Ken McCusick, Film Study Baltimore. Tell folks in Baltimore why they need to be a part of Film Study.
I appreciate it, Rob. So 9 podcasts a week, 2 articles a week. The big ones are on the offensive line and the defense. And there's one that breaks down the failures against the pass this year into what's really a function of the pass rush itself and what's a function of the other players and scheme behind it.
Ken McCusick, talk to you next Tuesday.